Hey, everybody, it's Tall But True. I am Mr. Ben Bailey.
Hey, I'm DC Benny, co-hosting.
I'm hosting. You're co-hosting.
What do we got? We got a guest today, We got a great guest today.
We have a great guest today who I think I mentioned you in one of our previous ones that we met at a roast.
Is that the way you do it? Like this?
No,
he's professional? Was I?
You can. Brian is a. We're just talking about the audio, and now yeah. Brian Haley, who's our guest. That's your intro now.
Brian Haley.
You flipped over your mic in the first minute.
This is like a Pink Floyd song now. I'm all over the place. I'm in your left ear,
you're
I'm
good.
In your right ear.
You want to talk into the side of it and have it a few inches from your face.
Oh, right. Okay.
I put it upside down for you in this seat so that it wouldn't have to be up so high, and we could actually all see
you. Oh, I get it. Okay.
So same deal.
And it's a little romantic.
Guy comes in, he turns the microphone over. He's in here for 1 minute. He starts rearranging. Are you one of those guys, you're on the road, you rearrange your hotel room?
I have to do everything. I got posters. I got everything. Yeah. Got it all set up, man.
Brian Haley, you're such a great dude. I met you at a party after the Patrice O'Neill roast in the city. We were at a party.
A Steinberg party.
And
yeah.
we hung out that night, and then you lived down the road here for a while.
Yeah.
And we hung out a couple of times, and I called Brian and said, hey, man, come do the show, and he did it. He came out here.
Nice. We appreciate it.
Yeah, coming in from New York now. I'm a New Yorker now.
Yeah.
I loved your stand-up. I saw your stand-up years ago. I thought it was hilarious, dude. I absolutely love
Thanks.
It. And you've been in like, how many movies have you been in? 20 movies?
Yeah, a couple dozen. Yeah, yeah.
20, 30 movies? Some big movies.
Yeah, I've been in a lot. I've had small parts in really good movies and big parts in really bad movies.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much.
Like, example of the first, The Departed.
The Departed.
You were in The Departed.
He got shot in the shots.
Sweet Toddy.
That's awesome. Yeah. You're in The Departed.
Yeah. I almost passed on it because it was such a small part. But it was Scorsese, and you know, everyone wants to work with Scorsese. I said, give me a name then. I can't have Detective Number 3.
Right. Yeah. Not
so
after.
They said, no, and they called me like the day before, we're starting, and you're taking it or not. So I'm Detective Number 3.
Uh-huh. Son of a bitch.
But it turned
Trying
into
fight
a
the
great
machine.
Gig because of Jack Nicholson and his majesty.
Uh-huh.
Because I was just supposed to work a few days, but Nicholson was doing the scenes the way he wanted to do them. And then Scorsese could do it the way he wanted to. When you're Jack Nicholson.
That was the order.
You can do it that way.
It was first Nicholson's way?
Yeah, and it completely threw off the schedule. So it turned into,
holy shit.
I started the day after 4th of July, and then I ended up.
So the 5th of July.
Yeah, that would be the 5th. Like, I'm not good with the math stuff. And then after a couple of weeks of the schedule being screwed up, and they sent me home and then brought me back, and then mid-September.
Wow.
And I got paid every day. I went home. I went back to New Jersey.
By the time you were done, you worked from July to September on it.
Yeah.
Holy
wow.
shit. It was supposed to be a couple of days.
Yeah. I got huge residuals from that.
But because, just to be to clarify, yeah, that's amazing, dude. Jack Nicholson would just get to do the scene however he wanted to do
the
it, however
he
felt
to do it. Yeah.
To be for his character.
Yeah. And then he let Scorsese direct him.
Did Scorsese get annoyed?
Well, I don't think he would be happy, but I'm just guessing. I'm assuming that just having Jack Nicholson in your movie is going to be a good thing.
Sure.
Yeah, even if
he's
you're
a great guy.
Even if you're Marty Scorsese, Jack is. Did you hang out with Jack?
No. Well, you know, I've done a couple movies with him, but
Hey, hold on a minute.
Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So you know him, like you've talked to him, and that's fucking amazing. Dude.
Yeah. He's one of the only guys I've ever worked with where I can't be myself. I've worked with some pretty big names.
You've worked with some of the biggest.
And it's no big deal, but for some reason working
really?
With him.
Clint?
Clint's real easy to get along with. He's not intimidating at all.
Clint Eastwood. Worked with Clint Eastwood.
When you said Clint, I was like, what other?
Yeah, who else is it?
You know,
it's Clint Black. He's also a country singer, Brian. I don't know if you know.
He's a huge name dropper, Clint Eastwood is. It's always the Queen Elizabeth this and Henry Kissinger that.
That's great.
Wow, that is amazing, dude.
That's great.
So The Departed, you're shooting... on and off, or you're at least on the
I work
on
like
the
a
schedule.
Week. And then
you're on the call sheet.
They get one drop and pickup, which means they can drop you and then pick you up whenever they want, and you're still on your original contract. But they did that once. I went home for a couple of weeks, and they brought me back, and the schedule was still so screwed up. Worked another week or two in Boston, and then they said, just go home. And now there's no drop and pickup. I'm getting paid.
So you're on even though you're
not
there.
For 2 months to sit at home in New Jersey every day. I'm getting paid.
That's a beautiful thing.
They finally just scrapped the scene they shot half of it in Boston, and then they just reconstructed a set in some alleyway in New York. When you watch the shootout scene where Queenan gets pushed off the building and all that, half of that is in Boston, the other half's in New York.
Wow. The magic of movies. Yeah,
and your residual schedule is set up in a way that it's the number of days you work plus the number of lines you have in something, so I got paid like
booyah.
That's a happy story.
It's a happy ending.
We have so
right
many
there.
Brutal showbiz stories on the show that
those are the good ones. Though. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear the happy stories.
Well,
The Departed.
We do.
What else were you in that I was like, oh, I love that, and I have forgotten. I always notice you.
The Man Who Wasn't There.
That's
Coen
it.
Brothers.
That's the one. Yeah. Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
And what an amazing one.
Yeah, that was a
film
lot of
noir,
fun.
Like gorgeous,
yeah,
great, beautiful movie.
I love those guys, man. Those guys.
They had me
Billy
smoking
Bob Thornton.
Bare ass camels in their Pall Malls in that to be period. And I'm not a big smoker. I smoke, you know, recreationally, like cigars,
right,
and cigarettes now. You know, no. But they had me smoking these bare-ass camels that were kicking my ass.
Oh, the filterless, the little shorties.
It's like bark. You
and
know?
Then they wanted me to. They said, okay, for this next scene for the gag reel, you after you do this, tell Billy Bob this, and then take off running.
So you're a federal agent or something after him, or you're a cop or a...
I'm a detective.
You're
a
detective, right, yeah.
I arrest.
You arrest him. That's a fucking great movie.
Yeah.
Are you a big Coen Brothers fan?
Yeah, well, you know, I love their work. Mm-hmm.
Cool. It's so cool, man.
I can't say no to that.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, some people would be like, well.
My favorite review.
They're a little out there for me, but you know, I like more of it. But I figured you would.
Their movie making skills are phenomenal.
Yeah.
They can get a little
and the writing
slow.
The writing, well,
I think.
But the writing.
You got to be into it.
It's interesting. I know what you mean.
My favorite review of.
It's like they pull you in and pull you in and pull you in. Yeah. It's like, how long can they keep pulling
me
in? I still feel like I'm being pulled in, but.
They are constantly messing with their audience. My favorite review of The Man Who Wasn't There, just the headline said, "The damn I couldn't give." Some people liked it. Some people didn't.
I liked it.
I remember Blood Simple when that was, I think wasn't that their first one?
I think that was the one that launched them. Yeah,
that was
their first big feature. Yeah.
Blood Simple, Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
Which I still. Fink. I have a
old
friend that I,
Arto.
All we do is quote, we send each other Raising Arizona quotes back and forth, you know.
You quote comedy. Did you used to memorize comedy when you were young?
No. Stand up? No.
Yeah. Really?
No, I never did, no.
DC?
No,
maybe.
Lines.
I would
repeat used to
lines
memorize
from some things, yeah.
Bill Cosby albums.
Mm.
I had friends that did it, but I didn't have the mental capacity, I don't think. Yeah. To absorb it all. I always have problems memorizing stuff. But.
I remember going...
Should become an actor.
The answer is yes for me. I have to change my answer because I just remember now myself saying to a bunch of other kids in like the middle school gym locker room, rat shit, bat shit, dirty old twat, 69 assholes tied in a knot. Hooray, lizard shit, fuck. Which is George Carlin's of... It's like all these words that he couldn't say. He made a cheer out of it.
Monty Python sketches?
Oh, Monty Python.
Monty Python for sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Monty Python.
Caddyshack? You didn't memorize scenes from Caddyshack?
Yeah. I was thinking pure stand-up.
Yeah. Pure stand-up I didn't really.
Movie lines? Fuck yes.
Movie lines.
I still do it.
Every podcast, every episode, you've regurgitated like three or four lines.
Caddyshack's got to be the most quoted movie. Yeah.
Remember that SNL sketch, the quotable Caddyshack? It was good, man. It was all about how you better be able to quote Caddyshack if you want to be able to succeed in the business world. Because everybody's throwing around Caddyshack quotes, and if you don't know it, you're not going to get the job.
How about a Fresca? How about Mr. Scholarship winner? Hey. It's a nice view.
Yeah. It's the under the deck.
Under the deck.
Dark.
That's where they
mud and beer cans
bury
view.
The bodies.
All the guests that aren't funny, they end up in there.
Yeah, that's the burial ground.
So now, when did you got into comedy when, man? Like, what made you get into it? And
you had some questions the show.
No, I just...
You can ask me about them, but now that's going to be part of the show.
No, this is the questions for what the show's about.
Okay, all right, let's do that. Let's run through those.
No, DC hit the first one. When did I first start getting into comedy?
I see what your questions are.
That was inadvertent on my part. I was just...
I thought you had questions for me about what this show was about before. I was going to say, let's do that as part of the show. That'll be fun.
When did you first start getting into comedy? Mm-hmm. What was your initiation into comedy?
Initiation into comedy, as in first time on stage, or as in
before that? What makes a comedian? I mean,
me, and I may have mentioned this before. I don't know, but I think it may bear repeating.
It's fine, dude. I realized we're doing this storytelling show every week.
Yeah, fuck it.
Stuff's going to come up. Stuff's going to come up again.
Apologies, audience.
We're not getting any younger. I hope you like these stories, people, because you're going to be hearing them over and over.
You're asking comedians to talk about comedy.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I had a step-grandfather that was... This dude was very mean. He was very mean. He did not like kids. And when I go over to my grandmother's house, like, she had remarried to this guy, and he was a step-grandfather. When I go over to the house, he'd be like, he'd give me a whole list of shit I couldn't do. He's like, don't drink the Kool-Aid out of the refrigerator. It's my Kool-Aid. He always had great Kool-Aid in the refrigerator. He's like, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't make a lot of noise. Don't run around. Don't slam the doors. It was just like this list of shit always. And it was just, he was always breaking my balls. So
your step-granddad wasn't Timothy Leary.
He wasn't. He wasn't.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid. That's a Kool-Aid. That's a don't drink the Kool-Aid reference.
No, he had his Kool-Aid, and it was back then he had it with it. He was very specific because he was, he did not like fat people. He was like, how do fat people get fat? He doesn't understand it. And he was just an angry dude, you know? So he didn't like fat people. He didn't like kids. He was just mean. He was always in a bad fucking mood.
How do fat people get fat?
That was the thing. He could not understand. He's like,
what is their problem?
Yeah, how do fat people get fat? So one night, and this was I'll never forget it. One night I was at the dinner table. His nickname was Oki. So this doesn't get confusing. He was Japanese.
Right.
His real name was Okamoto. His last name was Okamoto, which is like the Smith of Japan. But he was he was super American. He didn't like Japanese people either. He did not like Japanese people. He was super American, right?
Especially the fat ones.
Yeah, he didn't like fat Japanese people, skinny anyway.
So, the Smith of Japan.
I was a kid. I don't know how old I was. I think I was 5 or 6 or something like that. And I kept calling him Oak Tree instead of Oki. I kept calling him Oak Tree, and I thought it was the funniest fucking shit ever. I kept calling, and he was getting mad. He's like, that's not, don't call me that. Don't call me that. And my grandmother was busting out laughing at the dinner table. So I'd be like, oh, don't call you what, Oak Tree? Don't call you Oak Tree or whatever? And it was the power of humor. This guy had been so mean to me for my 5 years on Earth or 6 years or whatever it was. And to see the power of humor of like, here was the thing, you know, it's obviously not funny in retrospect, call Oki Oak Tree, but...
I think it's pretty funny.
It was great, hilarious. Man. It got under his skin, and to have my grandma, another adult laugh, to feel that was kind of right there as I turned
That's where
a little
you,
corner.
Like...
I turned a little corner. I'm like, wow, I have this thing that I could do, and I did it in other scenarios, but that one was like a real, you know, coming of age moment there.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know? So, I don't know. What about you,
That's
man?
Great, man. I feel like would be a common thread in that it's a situation where it's more or less a coping mechanism. You figure out you can use humor to get out of situations or to alleviate things or whatever. And we, all of us, for some reason had a knack at that it was the only place to turn probably in a lot of situations, but
comedy
we developed
comes out of
that
tragedy,
way.
Right?
And I idolized people who could do that too. My father had a friend and he would come over And all my parents' friends would be there. My dad would be like, do the Treasure of Sierra Madre. Do that scene in the Treasure, the badges scene in the Treasure of Sierra
badges.
Madre. And he would do this scene. He'd do the badges. He's like, badges? We don't have any badges. We don't have no stinking badges. And everybody at the dinner table would just crack up. I'm like, oh my God. And my parents held that guy in such high esteem
right.
for doing these random scenes from these old movies. And that was another, like, I wanted to do that. Yeah. I wanted to be able to do
yeah.
We don't need yeah. no stinking badges. That's yeah, been redone and used. It's yeah. like such a classic.
I think that's yeah, the number one catalyst awesome. Is when you see people's reaction to comedy when you're young and you want that.
Yeah.
You know, and you
yeah,
try.
You
want
to feel accepted and liked.
My dad was struggled with alcoholism when I was growing up.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I probably had a lot to do with that.
Well.
But he was he loved comedy, and my mom loved comedy. But things could be kind of depressing in our house now and then. So
yeah.
my mom would always love comedy. She listened to Bill Cosby albums, and she let me stay up late and watch the comedian on the Tonight Show, and. You know, just to
oh,
make your
cool.
mom laugh, that's
awesome.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But then just
yeah.
being,
oh, yeah.
I think it's in your DNA, you know, just being a wise ass, trying to make my large Irish Catholic family, trying to make my brothers and sisters crack up at in mass and stuff, anything.
Yeah.
How many brothers and sisters?
Six of us, so I'm number five of six.
Wow. And were you good? Were you getting laughs then?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
At dinner.
That's great.
Every Sunday we had dinner together with the lemon meringue pie, ham, potatoes, and lemon meringue pie, which I grew up to hate.
Yeah.
Oh, really? All of the above?
That was every Sunday. Yeah. And
or
then,
just together?
They, all in a drink.
All together. It's all together. This is too much like my childhood. I can't do this. We need a different
were you
dessert
raised Catholic?
With different meat. No.
No? Mm-hmm. I think being Catholic and Jewish is good.
Yeah,
for comedy,
right.
you?
It is, absolutely.
Guilt
absolutely.
And a lot of pain,
punishment yeah.
centered type of penance.
Right.
Jews and you find a lot of Jews and Catholics in comedy. And yeah, that was true of me.
And repression, there's some repression. There's a lot of, there's a lot of.
What makes a comedian? Pain.
Yeah, pain for sure.
Yeah.
When was your first time on? What was the first time you decided I'm going to do stand up, and why?
The first time I ever did stand up, I fell into it.
I heard this. Yeah.
Yeah, I flew to L.A. on a whim. I went through this horrible on again, off again thing with a girl I was in love with, and we were going to move to California together because I wanted to get into film, and so we broke up. I broke up with her finally. I said, I can't take it anymore. And I got on a plane and I went to LA and I ended up living out there for a while and couldn't find a job at a hotel, which is what I had my experience in at the time. And so I ended up coming out of what was then the Riot Hyatt, that Hyatt right next to the Comedy Store.
Oh, right.
That
yeah.
has all the legend of all the rock stars trashing it and like. Someone drove a car into the pool and all this crazy shit.
Little Richard gave me a look coming out of the doors. I was going into that hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And he was coming out and he looked at me and went, gave me that look, you know? The,
like, yes.
That like, oh, hey there. Like, whoo!
That's a fine Catholic man.
I know who's raised Catholic. But so I came out of there and I ended up shooting the shit with some guys in the parking lot. Turned out to be the general manager over at the Comedy Store.
What year is this?
93.
Yeah.
And so he said, we need somebody to answer the phones. I was talking about how I couldn't get a job. We need somebody to answer the phones. You have a good voice. Come and answer the phones for us. I said, all right. Took a job in there for $4 an hour or something. $3.50.
Yeah.
10 hours a week. Not making shit, but it was something. And then ended up going to the shows and... was telling us along this story is probably the full story.
The story needs an ending.
30 minutes. All right, you come into my house. You start conducting an interview on my show as though I'm the fucking guest.
Drinking scotch. It's outrageous.
Drinking my scotch. And now you want me to hurry up and wrap it up? I'm starting to wonder if I should have called.
We'll be right back with the Brian Haley Show.
But so... yeah, I ended up going into the shows and like they give you drink tickets at the end of your shift and started watching guys and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna give this a shot. I'm thinking about it and I end up getting invited to. I was telling this very story, which full told is probably a 20-minute story. Yeah. And there's a lot of craziness in it, how I ended up there. And these guys thought I was a comic and said, how long have you been doing stand-up? And I said, I just started.
And you lied.
And I lied. Yeah. I just started. And perfect way to get into a career.
Another through line with comedians, a little lying.
A lot of lying. There's another thing, yeah. And lying. Then, that's a whole show right there. Lies I've told.
So I did my first show that Friday night, and that was it, man.
One you bit, went. You one went on stage in. without bits. You had no.
No, I had a few days. They said come do the show this weekend. Oh, okay. And it was like Tuesday.
How'd it go?
I got a laugh with the first thing I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
My first time on stage. First off, I loved comedy. Just watching the. I always wanted to do it. Never thought it would happen. You don't think you'll ever do it.
Just get to the end.
And
you know, I had to throw it back at you.
I had.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
There is no ending to this.
No. I don't want to throw you off. I really want to hear your story.
No, I'm offended.
But I had to fuck with
you.
No,
we got a feud now. We got a feud.
All right.
This is Burr and Burbiglia.
What goes down in this basement stays in this basement.
So I was wanted to do it, and then I was going to do it in the Army. I was in the Army. They had talent show.
I
was
going to
do it. Yeah. Thank God I didn't. Because really? I saw my set list years later. Oh, my God. It was so bad.
Oh, you saved it? You'd like, you
yeah, know, yeah. Oh, I save great. All kinds of paperwork. I got all kinds
oh,
of stuff.
Oh, that's great,
here.
Man.
You are the first one who's come in with a bunch of notes. Yeah. And stuff.
I'm not the real off-the-cuff guy. I'm not a funny Colin Quinn kind of guy. I'm silly,
folks.
Which saved my ass. If you see, I'm not a big joke writer. I wrote one joke in the past year, I think it is.
Yeah.
It might have been longer.
Do you want to share it with us?
It goes, I went to check myself into a mental hospital, but the line to get in was insane.
So, I love it.
I'm not a big.
I love it.
I'm not a big. It. I don't write. I'm not really good at writing jokes, but I'm really good at being an idiot and being silly.
And acting silly. And
yeah, and so that's what I do.
I remember you very
so
that animated.
Saved, that saved
on stage
me. Yeah,
in stand up.
If
were...
I'm not. Able to be animated and weird, then
and in some of the movies, you're animated.
Yeah. He's so low key now. You're so low key right here.
Yeah, I'm not a big. I wish I were funnier in.
Me too.
You know, being able to work a room and. But a lot of guys are funny in the room and not funny on stage.
It's true.
Like both you guys, I could kick your ass in stand up if this were Last Comic Standing. But in the room.
That's him, man. He's all over that. He was one of the Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
You got.
Beat. We're all sitting down right now.
Yeah.
You got beat by Ant or someone.
Oh,
you?
I don't know what the fuck happened.
That
Ant.
Fan?
Yeah.
That's got to be humiliating.
Oh, there was so many things humiliating. There were so many humiliating
things. He seems
things.
Like such a nice guy.
Yeah, I know.
He sneaks right up and hits you in the back.
That's okay.
Oh, that
it
had
was
to
out
hurt.
There for everybody to see.
That yeah. must have been awful for you.
So how
started in stand-up?
Like you, working in construction. I'm out of the Army. My brother and I are doing houses and just, you know, refurbishing stuff. Nothing big. I'm not a big contractor, nothing. Painting, building decks and stuff. And he comes back and he was late and he's like, oh, I just had the greatest night. I went and saw stand-up comedy at this place in Seattle called Blocks. It was a place that had comedy every Tuesday night.
Is that where you grew up out there?
Yeah. Grew up in Seattle. And great town, great comedy town. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do stand-up at Blocks. I've been wanting to do it my whole life, and now here we go. I'm going to do it. And so I put my material together, and I go up there. But my brother, Mike, there's like four people in the audience. Two of them are comedians. Two of them are my friends, my brother and my friend. And my brother has little white index cards with my bits on them. You know, he's sitting right in the front row.
Great.
And he's holding them up
And he's holding them up for me. Those are my cue cards.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And the only laugh I got that night was when Mike, my brother, forgot to turn the cards. And I kind of looked at him like, and then you hear from the back, ha! You know, the comedian laugh, right? Ha!
Ha!
Yeah, exactly. But I loved it. I don't know why I loved it. Truth be told, I think there were actually two other people in the audience. So there were two comedians in the back, my two friends, two people. I just loved it. I loved it. Didn't, you know, it was nothing, but I just felt this was going to be great.
Me too, man.
And then it's all been done.
I say I got a laugh, and I did, but it wasn't like I had a great show or anything.
But you
But I got a laugh, and I knew, and I felt it, and
it just
I
felt like this is what I want to do, man.
In that set, yes,
yeah, that's
it was immediate.
That's when you know. That's why
this is what I'm doing.
These young guys are like who want to try it. Now I'm like, try it, and then you will know.
Yep.
You
oh, that's exactly what I say. Yeah.
You know, because it's and I went up and I forgot 80%, 85% of what I'd prepared. Right. Like 15% that I stretched out and just blanked.
Open mic.
It was. At my college, University of Maryland.
Oh, nice.
And I had all these, I prepared for days, and it was like I had all these fleshed out things about, I was all, doing all impressions of my professors. I had outfits like the hat and the glasses and the this and that. And I got up there and immediately fucking blanked. I just immediately blanked. I did like one professor and got the fuck off, you know?
but I did get
some laughs.
But
I
got you got some laughs.
And that was it. Once you hear those laughs, you're like, oh. Because that's the biggest thing is will
you're what you somebody.
Do translate what you do amongst your friends and family and make them laugh. Will it translate to a room of strangers that don't know
right.
you? That's
right.
the thing.
Yeah.
You know?
There's also the bit part about being able to write a joke. Which is tough. A lot of people just can't.
Yeah,
and,
it's true.
You obviously you got some good jokes, and Ben, you know, it's a, you just can come to a conclusion that is satisfying. A lot of people can't do that.
And put an rise, ending on it.
And mean, rise to be headliners. Mm. Absolute truth number one, most comedians suck. That's true. I mean, really, the majority of people who are out there are not funny people.
Mm.
They don't have funny ideas. They just learn the banter. How to trick the audience into like here's a punchline.
Well, I think if you're going to survive in the business, you've got to really. I mean, there's some great people out there. I don't know. I feel like maybe a lot of people that are successful aren't necessary. Successful comics aren't necessary.
I've seen some guys that have their own shows that are not funny.
I just feel like it's hard to say that because we're in New York, and New York is the apex of comedy, arguably, but maybe not arguably to me. And we're surrounded by really good fucking comics. So it's hard for me to say. It's hard for me to say maybe they're, you know, they're... You know, there's some shitty comics out there, but I don't see many of them in New York, man. I mean,
it's true.
What do you think?
It's true. They don't last. Yeah. I agree.
Well, they don't last, or they get a deal and they blow up, and that's, you know, they're on TV forever.
It's tough. You know, if you think about this, if you write 1 minute of material a week of good, a material, album quality, 1 minute, you are the most prolific comedian ever. No one's ever done that. No one has ever put out an album every year. That's 52 minutes of material a year. That's how hard it is to do this job. Of the volumes of stuff you come up with, how much is as good as like my
Insane
Asylum
joke?
Yeah.
Not much is going to be that
good. That's only 15 seconds. I need three more of those.
Just for this week.
Just for this week.
Right. Then you're good until Sunday.
It's just an enormous amount of work. It is an enormous amount of work. Look at Seinfeld, how good Seinfeld was. Probably one of the best joke writers ever. And he comes back, and what has he got? Nothing compared to what he used to have, because he just, the time it takes to, and the type of life you need to live. You have to shelter yourself from any amount of happiness and success and praise and worthiness. You have to be completely in this zone where you're, a failure, and then you come up with these jokes, you know, whatever.
It's an interesting philosophy.
I'm never going to work with that. I don't think you have to be there. I don't think you have to be miserable or feel like you're failing.
I think
in
you
order
have to find your voice. You find your voice and you go with that, and that's the...
When did you find your voice?
I just have to be creatively open, which means not stressed, not preoccupied by other stuff.
Yeah.
I need to be feeling... you know, a certain level of
Jerry,
as far as how good I feel for me to be able to get into the mode that I need to be in to write. Performing is another game. Performing is I don't have to be. I can do that one. I can hide all the shit long enough to go up and do my hour.
I don't want.
You know what I mean? But writing that's a little different. I don't feel like you have to be in a negative place for that to come.
Well, I just was half joking about that. That was tongue in cheek. You know,
well, it's okay. We don't have to agree on everything.
Let me put it this
either.
Way. Yeah, we do. Listen.
No, we don't.
You're very dry.
I beg to differ. No, I mean, Seinfeld's in good company. When I say that, I don't mean anything against Jerry. He's one of my favorite comedians, and he's in some holy company. But even Steve Martin, after his first three albums, there was a quick drop off after that. Then he's never had the time to immerse himself in the life of a stand up comedian in right. order to have albums as good as Let's Get Small.
Well, think of the first album, though. The first album is distilled over years and years and years.
Yeah, 10 years.
And then everybody wants you to make another one that's just as good in 6 months or a year. Yeah.
But what happened in those 10 years? A minute of comedy every 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
He's coming up with that minute of that gold.
Yeah.
And so that album just blows you. I mean, do you remember
the first
time?
Those guys both also, sorry, go ahead.
Do you remember the first time you heard Let's Get Small? Or Steve Martin is a wild and crazy guy. That was his first album, right?
Yeah, I think so. That was the first. What was the first one?
Whichever one.
I didn't.
I'm a half a generation ahead of you.
Yeah. Like I didn't hear his stuff when I was a kid.
I remember those albums, but I don't remember what.
Yeah, that's right. That was a long time. That was 80. That was 78 or so. When
the Jerk is when I became aware of Steve Martin and became a big fan. I had seen Wild and Crazy Guys.
But he used to do the arrow in his head.
And the arrow in his head.
Oh, Jesus, beautiful. 79, came out when I was in high school, maybe 78, and it changed my life. This is like, oh, my God, this is what I want to do.
That's awesome.
I love
Steve Martin. I'm a huge fan of Steve Martin.
Probably one of my biggest influences.
And Jerry, too. Now, these guys, my question was, do you think that part of the reason is obviously the time put in? But that's demand that's for your next piece of work.
That's everything I'm saying. Jerry's managing an empire.
Is it also, what I meant was the time, 10 years go into the first album, one goes into the second.
Yeah.
But also in that 1 year, they're also in demand to make movies and TV shows. So the stand-up is not totally their focus in that 1 year. So it's diluted even more.
Yeah. Right? And yet you got guys like Norm Macdonald who come out with a Comedy Central 1 hour. Was it a Netflix? I forget which one, but it was freaking dynamite a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who's had a good amount of success and then can still do an hour of new material that blows you away.
Yeah. Mm. He's
very prolific. He's
a funny dude. I love his bit about the homeless guy with the dog.
Yeah.
I don't need you to do this.
Hey.
I can walk around here by myself.
Norm and I did our HBO.
This is the longest walk I've ever been on.
Your Norm Macdonald sounds more like Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
This is the longest walk I've ever been on.
Just put it on the list of your complaints.
I'm just trying to fit
in. It's like
two
old ladies in here.
Trying to be like you New Yorkers.
Two old church ladies.
So what's your next question, Brian Haley?
I don't know.
It's the Brian Haley hour.
What makes a comedian?
What makes a comedian?
That.
Pain. Agony.
Pain, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And hope.
Sure.
Comedy influences. First time on stage, we got that one. First paid gig. Oh.
Your first time on stage, we got. What was your first time on stage?
First time on stage.
College.
College.
Oh, it was the college. That's right. Yeah. I was thinking about when you were first funny.
Listen. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. All right,
first
so I think we've got all those.
First paid gig.
First paid gig, I went to El Paso, Texas.
The Comedy Store.
Where I just went. The Comic Strip in El Paso, Texas.
Oh, yeah. That's a great room.
Opening for Harry Basil.
I love Harry.
Wow.
I got a great Harry Basil story.
At the end of the week, on like Friday night late show, I think, toward the end of the week, we were there from Tuesday to Saturday or Sunday, you know, full week. Somebody's yelling out my punchlines in the audience. Before I get there. And I'm like, what the I'm so confused.
It was Jay Leno.
It was fucking Harry Basil. It dawned on me, it's got to be him. He's the only one who's heard my shit all week. So I don't know what to do.
Why?
He's yelling out my fucking punchlines halfway through my jokes.
Was it Rich Voss?
No.
Was he drinking or something?
So wait. So I don't know how to get him to stop. And then finally it dawns on me and I go, here's my impression of Jerry Lewis singing Kenny Rogers.
You're doing Harry
which is
then.
His opening bit. And I go, lady! And then he bails. And then later, he's apologizing like crazy. He lost some deal. He lost a deal to for a movie that he was writing with Rodney.
Right.
Meet Wally Sparks, I think it ended up being Meet Wally Sparks. The deal fell, and he drank at the bar, and he came in and fucking took it out on me while I was on the stage.
No. God, it's very unlike him. He's a very nice guy.
He is. But you understand it was difficult for me to forgive him for that.
Yeah. Harry's got to forgive me if this is not accurate, but have you heard the story of him in Vegas with the girl doing the Superman bit?
I don't think so.
He does this huge bit. It's a huge closing bit of his. He's running. He's doing a montage.
Does all these movie
movie montage? He's movies. Doing.
He's Forrest Gump.
Tom Cruise doing the dance scene.
You can't handle the truth.
He does all that stuff, and he's doing Risky Business, that scene, and then he ends.
That's right. Yeah.
He does the titles for Superman. He has them written on big cards. The title, so they swoop by the stage like the credits do in Superman. And then he asks for a volunteer in the audience, and he gets this girl who lays on a bench on her stomach. He puts his arm around her and acts like he's flying with her.
Right.
But he's breathing really hard at this point. And he inhales some of her. She has long blonde hair and a black turtleneck. He inhales some of her hair and immediately vomits on her back. And there's an audible gasp from the audience. Just, oh! And she doesn't know what's going on. She turns around to look at him, and he kind of licks his chops and gives her a sorry.
He throws up on her your back. Hair. Oh!
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a closer.
Harry Basil.
Nowhere to go from there.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got another big hand for you, comedian. All right.
Well, there's no coming back from that. That was in that movie, the recent, Central Intelligence. You see that movie with...
Yeah.
You probably didn't. It's Kevin Hart and The Rock.
Oh, didn't see it.
Dude, it's actually funny. It's pretty good, yeah. And there's a part where this guy gets thrown into a really awkward thing, and he goes... There's no coming back from that. That's a good movie, man.
First paid gig, DC.
First paid gig. All right, so I was at University of Maryland. I had these friends that were comedians. They were twins. They would do a twin act, and they would come out to the Double Mint Gum music in yellow raincoats, and I was a theater English major. And the other guy was a theater major, and he was like, he showed me his tape. He's like,
there's nowhere to go but stand up from a theater major.
Oh, yeah. He's like, we do stand up comedy. You should come. And, you know, I had tried it once or twice, did the talent show at the school, did a couple. And he's like, we're middling at this gig. I forget who the headliner was. Do you want to open? It pays like $25. I'm like, all right. And it was this place called Griff's in Havre de Grace, Maryland, right?
Right.
And it
that
was...
That weird name.
Oh, it was a shitbox, man. Havre
de Grace.
Some bar. Some shitbox bar. And I'd never... I had like 3 minutes of material, right?
Right.
And...
love it.
Went up there, and it was like there was all this stuff on the wall. People were drunk. There was like a fucking oars and like...
Yeah, yeah.
All this stuff on the
TGI
wall.
TGI Fridays.
I don't know. I think I said
a
something
bicycle
like,
is hanging.
Yeah,
from
I was
the
like,
ceiling.
You get the impression that Griff doesn't like
tuba
to
somewhere
doesn't like to throw shit away or something like that. And I don't know. And it just was horrible. It was horrible, and I was just dying.
What'd
for
you
my
get paid?
2 minutes. I think it was $25 or something like that. And nice. I was such a rookie. I was like, I almost didn't take it because I bombed so badly or whatever. And then the yellow raincoat guys go out. My friends go out and just fucking kill. And to the Double Mint music comes on, and they come out there, na 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 na, and then I think Double Mint contacted them, found out about it, and contacted them, was like, you can't use the music anymore,
dude.
So,
do you remember? Yeah. And they were twins,
yeah,
those guys, right?
Sklars.
Do you remember? No, there were these two. There's Asian twin sisters that used to work at Caroline's.
Asian twin sisters.
And they told me, they said, we can read each other's minds.
That's what these guys would do. They would finish sentences. Yeah, they'd finish each other's sentences,
dude,
whatever.
So I said, bullshit. And they were like, no, we really can. You can test us however you want. And I said, okay. You sent one of them out into the hallway.
Oh, no.
Close the door. And then while she was in the hallway, I whispered something into the other one's ear. And I said, when you come back in, you tell me what I said to her. And it was random.
Yeah.
Totally random. And she got every single one of them. We did it 8 or 10 times.
Jeez,
it was like peanut. One was peanut butter. One was goat. Like, they were just freaked me out. I was like, holy shit. That actually,
that's worse
that's
than
actually happening.
When Tim Young almost hypnotized me at this trip.
Wait, is that a real story?
Yeah, he was like, fucking, I can hypnotize. I'm like, no, you can't. Because the people had tried to do it and didn't do it. And he's like, yes, I can. And he's like,
goes into his act?
No. Yeah. And he's like, yes, I can. And he starts doing some shit. I don't remember what he did. But right then my wife walked in and she was like, your eyes were like fluttering and some weird shit was happening. I was like, what's going on? So she kind of shook me out of it.
Oh,
you know, and she's like, that guy's weird.
I always thought it'd be a great idea
to have
a hypnotist open for you
and
hypnotize the crowd into thinking you're the best comedian they've ever seen.
That's
good
a
idea.
Great idea, dude.
Yeah,
that's if you could get a hypnotist to be an opener, you'd be in business.
That was one of my sleeping ideas.
I like that. I've had sleeping ideas. That's a
good
one.
I keep notes. I keep a notepad by my bed. I got and I write stuff down. And
so, like, when you say sleeping idea, you woke up and had that idea.
Well, you know, you kind
of
in middle of lucid dream or whatever. Yeah, kind of. You're just dying laughing. You write something down. You read it the next morning. Makes no sense at all. Or it's someone else's joke. It's one or the other.
Hilarious, though. Hilarious at that time. I've woken up laughing at my sleeping ideas.
Yeah, and you write them down.
Oh yeah,
and you're going, what the hell?
Because if you don't write them down, they're gone. And that's you're very lucid at that point. Come up with lots of good creative ideas when you're in that state, right? Your
mind is open. Happy Days. Here's a couple of them. Happy Days episode where everybody discovers Fonzie's a Jew. People
all right,
love...
now we're on to a new show. We're going to go through Brian's notes with him.
So this was hilarious to me. as
everyone figures out that Fonzie's a Jew. Whoa.
He's a Jew.
Sit on it.
Hey, Fonzie. Mrs. C tells me that you're the real last name. Fonstein.
Hey. Ooh. I thought you were Italian.
Hey. Correctamundo. It's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
People, so I thought this was hilarious. I read it the next morning. People love to update software, so update things for them. Cigars, books, sled, chair.
That's one of those you don't understand.
No understanding later. Yeah, so that was hilarious enough for me to write it down in my lucid dream.
You couldn't have weeded out those ones before you came over?
Dress up in a disguise and interview myself.
Oh, I like that idea. That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Mary, make a person carry a giant something from Costco.
Mayonnaise.
While walking
I'm picturing
down
a giant
the sidewalk.
Mayonnaise container.
Guy with the 4 foot kale pectate. They were hilarious at the time. I'm a cross between Charlie. I like this one. I wrote down. I'm a cross between Charlie Chaplin and Al Burton. The tea is like barely finished, and I fell asleep. I guess.
And Albert.
I'm a cross between Charlie Chaplin and Albert.
Einstein
is what I would think. That doesn't make any sense.
Albert.
Where's the comedy?
Albert Brooks. I don't know. Some Albert.
Charity. United we floss. These were
Albert Einstein. Brian Denny.
So first time on stage. Okay. First paid gig.
First paid
a
gig.
A buddy of mine. I'm doing open mics, and a buddy of mine says, "Hey, we'd like to have you do comedy at our group," and it was a Kiwanis meeting.
Oh, the Kiwanis Club.
A local small Kiwanis Club. Met in a hotel guest room type of a situation down
like a
lower level.
Banquet room,
small.
Yeah.
Maybe
at a Motel 6.
Maybe 20 people there, 30 at the most.
Did they sing?
Oh, they sing, yeah.
Oh, you beautiful doll, you great big beautiful doll.
Kiwanis. Yeah, they sing their songs. They have their routine. It's a business organization, if you're not familiar with them.
It's not the one with the hats, right?
No, they just make contacts. It's you have to be in business and you make contacts with people.
So networking. They've brought you in. You're
for
coming
lunch.
In to do a lunchtime show.
Yeah, I've never done a set. I'm supposed to do 15 minutes. I got about 5.
Right. Recurring theme with the first paid gigs.
Yeah.
I had 15 to do 30 when I was going to El Paso.
So you're eating with these people because that was part of the deal.
Oh, I'll
give you $30 right. and so a free lunch.
Right. Before the show. Lunch before the show. Yeah.
And then so I get up to do my act and I'm very weird. That's what I do. So, you know, these people are not my crowd. Plus, I don't know what to do. I've only been doing comedy a couple months, and I didn't know any better, so I did other people's jokes. I did a Howie Mandel joke.
Oh, shit. Which one? The one with
the
glove?
That was just a one-liner. The glove thing. Yeah, I just like joke, like one-liners. I wouldn't lift other people's material per se, but I did a one line from a Howie. It was the only one I did. I go, AIDS is a – they say you can get AIDS from a mosquito now. Personally, I think anyone that has sex with a mosquito deserves to get AIDS. Nothing.
Yeah.
And then nothing. Some woman in the silence goes, I've heard that somewhere.
Discuss amongst yourselves.
it was like I was giving a motivational speech where nobody really cared. It wasn't like comedy at all. That was brutal.
Did you get your money?
Oh, yeah. I got paid. And that was the inauspicious beginnings of how things.
Next
that
was question.
What do you have next on your list? So that was in Seattle area as
yep,
well.
Yep.
And you started off with some guys. Who did you mention?
Jeff Stilson. Drake Sather.
Who was the writer on Last Comic Standing, actually. The last one I did. The writer producer on there.
Yeah.
I remember him from a Young Comedian special. Didn't he? He did one of Rodney's Young Comedian specials, didn't he?
Yeah.
Stilson.
Yeah.
He had some funny shit, man. I liked him.
Humans are different from dogs. Something about humans aren't afraid of vacuum cleaners. I don't know, something. It was funny. But
I used to have a vacuum
Drake
cleaner
Sather was up and coming. Co-wrote Zoolander. With Ben Stiller.
Mm.
And then had a...
Rest in peace.
Yeah, bad ending.
Sorry.
And then...
we say that too often on this show.
Who else came after him? Mitch Hedberg was after us.
Again.
Jeez, I'm just bringing it down, man.
Comedians who died this week on Tall But True.
My buddy Jerry Swallow, he went on to be a writer, another writer. He wrote Say It Isn't So, who was bought by the Farrelly Brothers.
Mm.
And
so did you stay there? Or did you go to L.A.?
I was in Seattle and I had to make a decision. I was going to go to San Francisco. That was a huge comedy town back in the mid-90s, early 90s. That was the place to be. Everybody was there. From the mid-80s to the early 90s, it was Robin Williams came out of there. Dana Carvey came out of there. Ellen DeGeneres, Paula Pound. It was the mecca for comedy.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt moved there from
Boston
DC
comics.
Area.
And then that was it.
That was
something I'm missing here. Dana Gould moved out from Boston to San Francisco. A lot of comics were doing it. And I got a TV show, Robert Altman, a movie of the week called The K-Mutiny Court Martial. I need some water.
Should I open that door? Or is this
We can open it for a minute. Should be water in the fridge right out there. The Kane Mutiny
Court Martial. Now, so I had a credit, and I had a show I did on A&E called a stand-up show called Good Time Cafe.
Oh, cool.
And I thought, well, I'm ready to go to L.A.
Now, Robert Altman, director?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Another guy died. Everyone I talk about died. My father died. I shouldn't
imagine
talk
how
about
that happens the older you
don't
get.
Ask me anything
that's
about
the,
your mothers.
Show,
thank you very
died.
Much. Thank you. Yeah, that's the show.
Did you do a lot of stand up on the road ever, or did you kind of do stand up for a while and just move into acting mostly?
I started in 85. First time on stage 84. Okay. Motorcycle accident in 85. Couldn't do construction anymore, so I decided, okay, let's get back on stage and let's do this now. And so that's when I started in earnest, and things just took off for me. Won this
motorcycle accident.
It wasn't too serious. Screwed up my wrist and shoulder and knee, but it wasn't that big a deal. Kingdome parking lot. And then I
Kingdome parking lot. Huh? After what?
Well, the girlfriend on the back.
Oh, the girlfriend's on the back too.
Didn't see a yellow rope, which was parallel to five yellow lines, hit that, and we all went down.
And you went over and off. Ouch. Yeah.
And on the ground, I said, I got to get into stand-up comedy.
Why were you at the Kingdom that day?
Because I had a hot girl that on the back of my bike, and I was going to just park and kind of impress her with being cool.
I thought you might have been to a show.
It was opening day of Mariner season.
I just
sit there in the parking lot and just, you know, it's a, we were just driving around New Seattle. So then I go, that's 85, and by 88, I have to decide, am I going to move to San Francisco and work on my act, which is what I should have done. And because I've only been doing stand-up for 3 years. How long do you think it was before you found your voice?
Oh, geez. More like 10.
Really? Yeah, that's what they say, 10
years.
Well,
like, I mean, I did well, and I got laughs, and it's funny, but like then at one point I wrote this bit about filling out a job application, which is Ben Bailey Boulevard.
Yeah, the infamous bit. Yeah,
it ended up being sort of my signature bit, and there was a cadence that went with that. And that was sort of unlocked this little key to it for me.
I got to do a little log rolling here, a little Jerry Lewis style. But Ben is the only comedian that's ever called me and said, hey, listen, I'm doing, what were you doing? You were doing a...
I was in Montreal.
No, you were doing a 1 hour, though. I think you were doing your first 1 hour.
Oh, I was taping a special.
Yeah,
oh, when I called you about the bit.
And you said, hey, listen, somebody's told me you have a bit that's kind of similar to this.
Yeah.
And he bounced it off me. I said, well, you know, yeah, it's not. It was very cool to do that.
Dude, I called you.
And I said, my bit's, obviously, it's kind of a stock premise. It's a familiar thing. It doesn't sound like you stole it, but just know I did it on my HBO special already. And
well,
someone
no, wait,
might.
There's more to it. I called you about a bit. I'm about to tape, and my managers at the time, they've watched my set however many times, you know, leading up. And then the night before I'm going to be taping, they say, oh, Brian Haley has a bit a lot like that one.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what bit it was. And then I said, oh, shit, what the fuck do I do now? It's part of my set. I've honed it for him.
Yeah, of course, you can't alter your set. You got the rhythm
and
everything.
So I called you
and
asked you about that bit, and you said, no, I don't have a bit like that. And then we talked for a little bit, and we found out that there's another bit that we had that was similar.
Oh, were you doing that other bit on the special?
No,
no.
So the managers, the Steinbergs, again, were completely wrong. about it, and so I could continue and do the set as planned. But I also learned by calling you that here's the bit that I had, not the one that they thought was like yours, but the one that actually was. I would say I was writing in my notebook on the train the other night, and I noticed there was a man reading over my shoulder.
Right, yes.
And then I said, I would write, he would read, I would write, he would read, write, read, write, read, and then finally I couldn't take it anymore, so I wrote these words.
Yeah.
I was writing in my notebook on the subway the other night when I noticed a man reading over my shoulder. So I stabbed him in the neck with my pen.
Yes.
And he ran off, and you ended up, it turned, you had a bit that was very similar to that, right? Very similar in concept.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that on Caroline's. But it was a very classy thing for you to do, to clear that. And, you know,
seem like there was much else to be done to me. Like, right. Well, I need to find out.
Yeah.
I'm still not going to forgive you for it. But we'll figure out a way to get you.
But I didn't even. It was a different bit.
Anyways, whatever, Ben.
I think we're
moving. You have
to
live with yourself.
Question.
Oh, yeah. Wait, let's get back to Brian's list.
Yeah.
What have you got?
What were
there?
We talking about?
That was.
Just now? We were talking about a bit that you and I had in common.
There's something before that.
Which is fine. We could talk about that. Talk about that sort of stuff. It's loosely formatted. We don't have to stick to
anything. Yeah, this is a pretty loose format here.
I told you. I told you.
More notes are coming out.
Holy can't
shit.
Find my
folder.
It's got everything he ever wrote.
Vanilla envelope. Yes.
What's the first joke you ever wrote before you did stand-up?
My brother wrote my first joke for me.
Okay, but that would be
that
the first
was,
joke he
and
ever
it was
wrote.
A local joke, a Seattle joke. They had these Diamond parking lots, they were called. Diamond was the name of the company, and if you didn't pay, they'd chain a barrel to your front bumper, a giant 55-gallon drum. And the first bit, it kind of got a snicker. My first time on stage was, my car is a 4-barrel, one from each Diamond parking lot I went to last month. And that kind of got, and that was it. My first joke, Jesus.
Like the first time you had, like for me, when I was a little kid, I came up with a joke and I told everybody.
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I used to just quote stuff. Mm. Yeah, memorize Bill Cosby, Fire Sign Theater albums and stuff.
The go-kart races, remember that?
Yeah.
Tragic.
I wrote a joke. The first joke I wrote, because the rest, most, I would do characters. That's, I would do straight characters. But before I did the characters, the first joke I wrote was, I was in college and I had gotten a Discover card in the mail. So I was like, I got a Discover card in the mail. I discovered No Place Takes the Fucking Thing. And that was the joke. And then years later, Attell had a Discover card joke that was like this, essentially the same joke. And of course, you know, that was his, and I was like, I was new and everything, but it was so validating as a joke writer that here's one of the best joke writers ever. Not that that's the best joke ever, but that that's, you know.
I know what you mean on such an exact level. I wrote a joke about how I flew to Australia, and when I got there, it was actually earlier than when I left. So I called myself and reminded myself to go get on the flight. And then Attell, same thing. He goes, it's so much earlier in Australia. He goes, when I got there, I called my house. I picked up the phone.
Right.
And I was like, okay, there's the validation. Same thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't do that anymore because he's Dave Attell and I'm no one at the moment.
Right.
But I feel like I'm doing well because he's, you know, it's the same. Yeah, same thing, man. That's
really validating.
Cool.
It was validating. Yeah. Especially when I came to New York, I had a lot of my material didn't translate. But that joke, you know, I brought with me, and it kind of, and then to see later on, like, wow, that somebody really funny wrote essentially the same joke, because you always question yourself, right?
Yeah.
You always question your abilities.
And it works the other way, too. If you see someone doing it, you're like, oh.
Yeah,
I gotta up my game. That fucker wrote the same joke I did.
Yeah. Well, if somebody's horrible, I wrote the same. Yeah,
oh, you're
God,
like, oh,
that's
I'm
the worst.
Slacking off.
That immediately gets buried in the
that
fucking
joke is gone.
Sand litter box.
We gotta up the standards.
Yeah,
Arnold Palmer. A guy played golf with Arnold Palmer once, and he came back. His game was much better. And this is not a joke, but the guy asked him. His buddy says, "How'd your game get so good?" He says, "Arnold Palmer gave me some great advice." What's that? Never take advice from someone you can beat.
Yeah.
And that's a good rule for life, you know, to hang out with people that bring you up to that next level where you watch them. You're watching someone perform going, damn, man, I suck. I got to get this good. I got to get good like this.
Yeah, yeah, it motivates you.
That's how you get up.
Attell was that guy for me. I did stand-up in L.A. for like 6 months. And then I moved home and I went into New York and did it.
He seems like he was funny just right out of the gates.
Well, he had already been doing it a while when I first saw him. And he found his voice. I've talked to people who were around when he was there before I was, and they've said he created this onstage character. It evolved into what it was, and then he like became that guy full time. That's what somebody said.
He assumed the fandom.
But I watched people. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I watched comic after comic when I came to New York, and I did one or two sets. No, I definitely did. I definitely did some hacky stuff that other guys had done that I had seen on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hacky, but I didn't steal jokes from anybody knowingly. You know, like.
No, I never
did
either.
You know what I mean? I feel like a
lot
of guys are hacky in the beginning, but I know I was.
Ellen DeGeneres and Jerry Seinfeld both did bits after my HBO special, in their HBO specials that are remarkably similar. So it either you can write it off to. It's just a common thread, and it's bound that someone's going to come up with this bit on airline seats.
Well, for me, it was like I didn't know it until someone pointed out to me. I had a thing about nicotine gum, and trying to shake my addiction to nicotine gum, and luckily cigarettes came along, and I was able to you know to quit using cigarettes, and I thought. This was a great bit. I love it. It was one of my strongest bits. And then I did a gig on the road in Pennsylvania, and some comic, I don't remember his name, kind of dressed like a cowboy, came up and asked me, you know, hey, do you know Jake Johansson? And I said, no. I mean, I know who he is. I don't know him. He goes, but you've seen him. he's very like, he's making a point, and I get it. And I go, oh, shit. And I look, and I had... heard Jake do it years before when I wasn't even a comedian. And then I had, and then, oh, so I had to stop doing that bit. Yeah, I figured out it was very much the same bit. So that's a little different from what you're talking about. I don't, it wasn't,
I heard it.
I can't say, yeah, it was like mine's. It was just out there. No, I had heard it when I was a kid and didn't think about, you know, I can't use that. That's not mine. It was just, not, it was in my subconscious.
Subconscious.
So as you're starting out, you just are grabbing at straws. You don't know what's funny. You're kind of doing stuff. You've kind of, you're trying to impersonate comedians. You get in a banter. You figure out the da-da-da-da. And you're doing the hacky stuff, and it's all mixed in with you being funny, hopefully. And then, but as you're starting out, you don't know who you are if you don't understand. This is what it's like to be a comedian. You find your voice somewhere, sometime. For me, it was on The Tonight Show. Uh-huh. I was trying to be one of these snarky kind of hip comedians, but that's not me.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be like Dana Gould and Tom Kenny and all these guys that were real hipsters and cool and self-depreciating. But I'm just a crazy person, more like Steve Martin than like Richard Lewis or something, you know? Or
your actors.
Or Dennis Miller.
Zany.
Yeah. Dennis Miller dropping Sergey Bubka references, you know, just anything.
Right.
It's so out of place.
Exactly. It's not cool not to laugh at it.
Yeah,
he's like Sergey Bubka on Ice Capades.
He's doing the NFL. He did Monday Night Football. That guy had him wrapped up like Christos.
That didn't go over well, the football thing.
But yeah, I found my voice on The Tonight Show, and it was just me. I was doing my stuff.
You're already on The Tonight Show.
And I'm bombing. I come out, and my first stuff is not going over that well with the audience. I have to make a connection with the audience because I'm very weird. And that's my act, is I'm weird. And they weren't necessarily buying it. But as I got happy with one thought, and the thought was, you know what? You have to be on The Tonight Show to bomb on The Tonight Show. And this was such a huge thrill for me that I just got happy.
And I
started screwing around and having fun.
You got loose.
I could hear the band laughing to my left. And then I could see Johnny leaning back out of the side of my eye, leaning back in his chair. And that was all I needed.
Oh,
I
fantastic.
Went back. I was moving, using the stage. I'm splashing water on my face. It's getting on the curtain. And I just came alive. And
I remember it, dude. I saw that. I remember. Yeah.
I realized this is who I am. Uh-huh. I'm silly. I'm a crazy person. I do silly stuff.
Not and straight monologist.
No, I'm not a joke writer. I'm not that kind of guy.
You were animated. You're acting things
there's
out.
There's a
picking up hitchhikers and
there's an art to coming up with jokes as a someone, you know, like Steve Martin, more like that. Though I'm not in no way in his caliber. I do a lot of his jokes though.
But can you play the banjo? But can you play the banjo?
And that's where I found my voice. But prior to that, you're trying all kinds of crazy stuff, and that's the next
topic. You're like
stabbing
in the dark. But wait, before we get to that, I watched a lot of comics when I first came back to New York from L.A. And that's why I was saying Attell was that guy for me. I was kind of unimpressed.
In L.A.?
In New York.
In New York.
Until I saw...
Sure,
Dave.
I'm telling you, man.
And then
he made it look easy.
And then I was like, "Holy shit, that was awesome!" Like we were crying, my friends and I, who had come to see me. We were laughing so hard, and I was like, "There's the bar." That's what I want to shoot for. Is
Dom Herrera?
Dom Herrera
in Seattle.
Dom was like that for you.
Crying. It was just. I've never laughed so hard at a set and seen an audience so. In fits of laughter for so long. I mean, he could sustain it for like 10, 12 minutes of solid laughter, just riffing off of people and
just
his material.
Stoking the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Get him there. Keep him there. Doesn't matter what you do. Just keep him going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's great.
Right, right. But nothing like me. It's not as funny as me.
He was very quotable. He's a comic that I quoted.
Yeah.
You know, bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like a frog, so I leap. Bada boom, bada bing. We're smoking cigarettes.
He's
fucking
silly.
Funny.
Yeah. I love it.
Petey, little Petey, regular Petey. Everybody coming around. How come you don't come around? I don't know.
So what
am I going to say? I got a rash on my ass so bad I can't sit down. But you know me.
Did you ever use props?
I can't complain.
I used props when I first
did. You really?
Oh,
yeah, get out.
There's a tape of me.
Get out, both
I'm
of you.
I'm trying to find this fucking tape.
Oh,
I am
yeah.
trying to find this tape, man. And it was the first Apollo I did. That was for me. That was like my Tonight Show.
Showtime at the Apollo? At the Apollo. Oh, that's a bad place to do that.
Showtime.
Oh, it was the first one
at
I
the
did.
The Apollo.
And I had a thing about a Chinese dry cleaner. And
that'll go over great.
Oh, man.
This is thing, a YouTube written all over it.
Oh, if I had that tape. There's other Apollos on there, but that one, and what it was is I would do, I'd be like, I go to the Chinese dry cleaner, I lost my ticket. And the guy's like, you lost your ticket, and it starts speaking Chinese to me, and it's like the old Kung Fu movie, man. You can't see it, but it's like, you killed my teacher, you bastard. You poisoned the ticket. I will get revenge. You get that bastard. And then so...
I remember the bit.
He whips out, I had constructed out of clothes hangers, nunchucks. So it was two clothes hangers, shirt hangers with a string in the middle that duct taped. And I had these nunchucks and I would break them out and I'd be like, and I'd do the fucking nunchucks and people would go
and language
nuts
and the voice
over the, and the voice. People would go nuts over that fucking thing. And
language, I come on. He's just children everywhere. Listening to this show.
No, but there isn't, Brian.
I have to carry these hangers everywhere. That was the thing is I'm carrying these hangers around. And people will be like, wait, watch this shit. You know, the hangers. It was my big closer.
Oh, dude, that's hilarious.
And then Shabba Ranks singing country music, and I had these little glasses, you know, that I would bring. So I had the hangers, the little glasses, and there was some other thing. So I carried this bag of props. And after a while, I got so tired of bringing
props around.
I forgot the hangers one night. That's what it was. I was in a hurry. I ran out. I'm like, holy shit, I'm at the gig. I'm like, I don't have the fucking hangers.
So you just did the hands.
I just did it. I just did it. You killed my DJ? Yeah, boss, this guy's kung fu is no good.
Dude, that shit used to kill.
It's funny. Yeah.
I remember seeing that.
Now you do it, but here's the funny part, is that voice... Now, if you do that voice, people don't know about those movies. I went to a college.
Oh, yeah, they're nowhere
the kids,
to be
they
seen
have
anymore.
No idea about those dubbed, you know.
Oh,
I did
shit
it.
Was
nobody
hilarious,
did.
Those movies, man.
But, yeah, that was my... I had props, man. I had some props.
I never had
props.
A prop. The closest I ever came to a prop is I had this black shirt with gray. The outside of the sleeves were gray, striped all the way down. And then I had a black
clothes.
Hat.
Oh, man.
And I had a black, like, hat.
Like,
hat,
like
you know,
a
that
Kangol?
Would sort of stick up. No, yeah. No, like a...
Navy SEAL hat or
a
like
winter
a
hat.
Oh, okay,
like
yeah, like a ski
hat,
cap.
But it would stand up on my head if I lifted it up. And I saw myself in the mirror at the cellar, and I went, "Oh my god, I look like a gray crayon." and then it evolved from, you know, I'm a crayon to like I'm a used crayon. I would flatten out half of it, and then someone comes up and goes, "Dude, you can't do that crayon shit. Somebody did that on." I'm like, what? You gotta be kidding me! But sure enough, yeah, somebody had already done a bit where they look like a giant crayon.
Oh, yeah. I did, I did some prop stuff early on. But the problem was when I started out in 85 to 90, I did my,
okay back
my first
then,
Tonight Show was in July of 90. In those years, there was so much comedy on TV. It was unbelievable. There was Evening at the Improv right. Tonight,
Caroline,
stand-up, half-hour stand-up comedy hour. It was everywhere. It was ubiquitous. Yeah. There was stand-up,
stand-up
shows
spotlight.
On every... Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
Bobby
yeah.
Collins.
L.A. Oh, my God. L.A., the comic strip live.
Yeah.
Anyways, so...
yeah, there was a lot.
Yeah.
So you got 5 minutes. They give you a set.
Yeah.
And you're going to say no?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you should. There's some horrible stuff of me out there. Just, it's so painful. It's so awful. Just know if you see me doing really bad stand-up. I know. I know I'm bad.
I always liked what I saw of your stuff.
I
didn't get TV for a while, so like by the time I got little five-minute spots, I had...
It was sharp.
Yeah. I had polished sets, you know, that I could do.
Yeah, because it
oversaturated. You can be a victim of getting stuff too early when you're not ready.
I was way too early. I was not ready for the success I had. My success has been my biggest detriment because I immediately got a deal for my own show at Fox. I wasn't ready for that. And
wow.
That took me off the stand-up scene. If I'd have just worked on my set for years, like you guys were here in New York, I probably would be a household name now.
You'd probably be doing stand-up still.
That's my excuse.
Are you still doing stand-up?
I haven't done stand-up since
It's been 08. A long time, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Since Gran Torino is when I stopped because I thought, things are going to start happening now.
But the acting shit really kicked in for you.
Yeah, what was the first movie you were in?
First movie I was in was that Robert Altman made-for-TV movie, The Kane Mutiny Court-Martial. Then after that, I did a small extra part in Black Widow, a Deborah Winger movie, where I got to dress up like a Seattle cop. And as I was hanging out in downtown Seattle, people thought I was a cop.
Yeah.
And I was having some fun with that.
That's happened to me.
Staring
at me
people.
Too.
Yeah.
Oh, now that's what we should have been talking about. We're going to start again from the beginning. No, I'm just kidding.
Law and Order, dressed
Law
up
and
like
order,
a cop.
Law and Order, dressed as a cop.
Yeah. People thinking you're a cop.
I was wearing a real uniform.
Me too.
Of course. Yeah. And they said, you can't be out here on the corner dressed as a cop. You look like you're impersonating a police officer right now. So I went into my trailer and waited. Yeah. While I was in there, someone got stabbed on the corner and robbed while I was taking a nap in the trailer.
Oh, shit.
Like right where I had been standing before.
Wow.
Some guy comes up to me and asks me for directions. I go, I don't know. I don't work here. F you, man. You're an asshole. I had someone think
I don't work here.
Some guy, I'm not a cop, I said. I'm wearing a full Seattle Police Department uniform. I'm not a cop. I don't know.
How funny is it that we all have that in common?
Yeah.
Were you, was it Law and Order? Or was
I was Law and Orders. I did. Yeah, Law and Orders. I'm trying to think of the first cop thing. It might have been no, there was something before that. I can't remember. I think I told this on another
episode.
I was chasing John Leguizamo. Security guard, a cop. I've done so many cops. You don't fucking remember. But if you're it was Freedomland. It was Freedomland.
I thought it might have been Freedomland.
It was Freedomland. I was the
hospital
cop.
I was almost next to you in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I went back in and then didn't. And then I call back and then didn't go. But
what was your first TV show then? Your first stand-up appearance?
Oh, geez. Late Friday.
I remember that show.
On NBC, I think.
I remember that.
Yeah.
A video show?
It was
something?
Friday Night Videos, and it turned into Late
Friday. Maybe it was that. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Might have been Star Search. Jeez, I can't believe I can't remember.
In LA.
It might have been Star Search. I did a Star Search with Arsenio. And I went pretty far, and it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was great. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, sure.
It was,
and you're only doing 2.5 minutes or something.
And I was like, I was famous for like a week.
Who'd you lose to
after that? A guy named John Roy. Justice. No, I'm just kidding. But like, it was enough people watched that there was like a little. I got a taste of being recognized that, and that felt really good.
I got recognized early on in my career. I was walking and this guy crosses the street with traffic and is yelling at me. I didn't know what he wanted.
Right.
So the New Yorker side of me kicked in. I'm a Seattleite, but I have a lot of New York in me.
Right. You're angry.
And so I didn't, when someone comes at you yelling and waving, you don't want to look like you're afraid of them. You want to look like they shouldn't talk to you. And so I was rude to him. And then he goes, oh, yeah? Yeah, well, I hope your show bombs. I didn't have a show at the time. And I realized he thinks I'm Drew Carey.
Oh, shit.
Because Drew had just had a show. It all made sense now. Oh, okay. So somewhere in Manhattan Beach, California, is a guy who hates Drew Carey and tells stories about what an asshole this guy is, how nice he was to him and excited to see him. And Drew Carey.
He was great. Fuck off. Leave me alone. You get, if anybody, Drew Carey? If they think you're someone else other than you are.
I get Matt Frewer a lot. People think I'm Max, the guy who played Max Headroom.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I could see that a little, yeah.
A little Brian Dennehy, right? Just a little bit?
Thank you.
A little bit.
Dennehy.
You know Brian?
Awesome, yeah.
Oh, I love that guy.
Love that dude.
Of course you do, because I'm here when I leave. You go, geez, he's put on some weight, hasn't he? But first time headlining... Well, I mean, first time TV gig was there was a show in Seattle called Almost Live with Ross Schaefer. He went on to host Joan Rivers took over for him on that show. Arsenio took over his show.
Oh, okay.
It was Joan Rivers, then Ross, and then warm up, and you could get a tape.
Oh, that's
Arsenio's like late show talk show.
Hmm?
That he did, you mean?
Yeah.
Was it was
Ross Schaefer left
Joan
Seattle.
Rivers, then Ross Schaefer, then Arsenio.
Ross left almost live and went and did that show for a year or so. And
nice.
Then so you could do warm up for Almost Live in Seattle, and they give you a tape as an exchange. And I did like 4 minutes, and oh my God, I saw the tape. I was so, you know,
yeah,
happy.
Yeah, yeah.
I am so funny. I look so great. This is awesome.
I was on TV.
And then about 10 years later, I popped in the VCR and just like, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
I must destroy this. Freeze! I pray to God there's no copy of this. I'm pretty sure I have the only copy.
In the world.
In a box hidden somewhere in my house. I swear to you, I can't watch it. It is so painfully bad.
Well, there's and a couple of those.
Think
those
that
things.
I thought
I got a couple where I'm like,
on
yeah.
fire.
I was doing something nervously and didn't realize like there's one where I'm actually like rattling change in my in my pants pocket.
Oh, that's professional.
And that's all you can really, if you notice it, it's over. That's all you're going to see and hear for the rest of it, you know. So, but I was happy with the Star Search. That late Friday one, the crowds weren't great. There were L.A. crowds who were, like, paid to be crowds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
First time headlining.
Geez.
Oh, well, mine was at a college, and Wanda Sykes was opening for me. And I was like, I'm nervous as shit. She had been headlining. Well, I'm like, I'm nervous. I don't know if I've got the time or whatever. And she's like, listen, if she gave me a great piece of advice. She's like, what you do, go out there, bring a glass of water. And in between each joke, take a long sip off the glass of water. It'll give you time to think about the next thing. She's like, watch. And she went out there with a glass of water, and she was sipping it in between these jokes. And I was like, that's fucking genius. And I went out there with a glass of water, and somehow, I had about a half hour. Somehow I got, you know, like, I think 47 minutes.
You wet your pants, didn't you?
Oh, my God. I mean, but that glass of water thing. Yeah,
that's
well,
really smart. I thought you were going to say you went out and drank the whole thing in the
piss.
And then you're like, what am I going to do now?
Pounded it.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah. In that case.
Son of a bitch. Let me get some more water out of here, please. That's funny. Wanda was opening for you.
Yeah, I know.
I can't remember when I first headlined. Do you have a story for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why I got the bullet points.
All right.
College also. My brother's going to college in Oklahoma, and he's in tight with the people. It's a small college, and so I go there, and he says, you know, come on out. We'll fly you out, and you can stay in my room, and then, you know, do stand-up for the what's it called? I don't know. I never
Student went to
college.
Activities?
Student, yeah. HUD or
HUDs, some shit.
Something like that.
SAC?
Yeah.
SAC, HUD, yeah.
And so,
it's always some, like, SPAC or, horrible, like,
yeah, yeah. Balls.
Something.
Spooge.
So they, I was not ready at all, man. I was, I maybe had 20 minutes, and I'm supposed to do 45.
Yeah.
I brought a bunch of stuff I was going to improvise with, a record player and an album. That became a big excuse for me. Well, if I had this working, I couldn't get the record player to work, thank God, because that was, I blamed it on that. That's where my material was. And yeah, I did about 20 minutes and then started working the crowd.
Just did crowd work for 40?
Yeah, but I was the only guy, too, because it's not like a place that does a comedy show. They just had me.
Right.
Up cold too. That's always.
Did you ever miss your intro? Or late for? How about
one time
just late
at,
for?
One time
late
at the
for
old
the set
at the old Gotham.
Yeah.
On 22nd Street, which I've said before repeatedly was one of my favorite places.
It was a great little club.
I love that
man.
Room. Yeah. I had such great shows in there.
Yeah.
And if you remember, if you come out of the room there, on the right side, they had the curtain, right?
Yeah.
If you come through the curtain, go out toward the bar and make a right, there is a little bathroom there for the comics and staff and whatever. So you have to go all the way down to the bathroom downstairs. I thought I had plenty of time. I really had to shit. And I went in there. I sat down and I was just committed. And I fucking heard William Stevenson, who came up a lot of last one.
Bailey!
And I was like, no!
Oh, man, that's beautiful.
I rushed things, to say the least. And I was buttoning and buckling on my way up.
Oh, that's horrible.
It was terrible, dude.
Oh, yeah.
That's horrible.
I missed getting an Emmy. I won an Emmy, one of those.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the bathroom when they announced that I had one ass in the bathroom for one of those.
You should show up to a party with all those in your arms.
With all of those. Hey, everybody. I brought one for everybody. But so, yeah, I missed that one. That was a pretty big one.
That's the story you should have told first.
Yeah, how did I forget that one?
Gotham.
It was a hotel. I'm headlining at a hotel somewhere where the club is in the hotel. And, I kind of blanked on the time and ran downstairs. And the look on the MC's face told it all.
Yeah.
I had already been intro'd, clearly. And it had been a while.
Wow. And they did the Von Trapp Family Singers thing.
Oh, yeah.
And over and over. And then it was like, fuck! He's not coming!
Tom Wilson tells a hilarious story about some small town doing the Sound of Music on an outdoor stage in summer stock.
Right.
And someone had this brilliant idea of putting pigeons or doves, releasing them at the end for the big numbers. They're all doing and all the kids would come, goodbye, farewell, that's it. Yeah, that's it. And the genius that came up with the idea put these bird cages up on the light stands.
Oh, no!
An outdoor theater, yeah. And so when the time came for this final number, they release the things, and dead pigeons start falling on the stage, some of them half smoldering and flapping.
Oh my God.
The image, isn't that great? All these kids dressed up in lederhosen singing this song.
Dead birds start falling.
That's like a New York performance art piece.
Somebody told me
that is fucking awful and awesome. Hilarious. Holy shit.
If you go to the Disney lot in L.A., I guess it was the Disney lot, but I remember going there and they had these seven dwarves.
As you're going in, yeah.
For the parking? For the park? Or
yeah,
you mean
Buena
like
Vista,
the studio
the
lot?
Dwarves,
I think that's what it was. So apparently the story goes that whoever the architect was that built that lot, those were going to be the last things that he was going to build. And Disney shorted him on the money. So he designed it so that wherever the dwarves were, whenever it rained, it looked like they were pissing. The rain would hit them, and it would look like they were pissing. And I remember going there one day, and it looked like the dwarves were fucking pissing, like those little, you know, cherubs in the fountain.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was very funny. Some artist out there told me that. I don't know if that's true
awesome.
Or not.
I hope it is.
Yeah.
So then, how about, have you ever bombed so bad you had no more material and you were short?
You just ran out?
Yeah. You ever done
I've ever run
way
out.
Under?
I don't think I've ever run out. I don't think I ever left doing having done less than my time.
You
I always
need
suffered
to
it.
Bomb a lot more like me. Yeah.
I've bombed. I'm not saying I've never bombed. Believe
my
me.
My friend Jerry Swallow.
I bombed before so bad I thought my career was over.
He had cojones that I wish I had. He went up in Bakersfield at a pizza joint for a one-nighter. They were heckling him on the way to the stage. He gets up to the mic and goes, I don't think this is going to work, and turns around and leaves.
Wow.
I love that. That's Red Fox right there.
Yeah, that's the old... Yeah.
I have an old goddamn people. Play him off. Play him off.
I think
we got to wrap it up, you guys, but a great episode of Tall But True. Thanks to Brian Haley. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Wait, were there any more questions? We got
did we get through your whole agenda for the show?
No, about half of them.
The first guy who brought his own show format.
I'm at Clinton, Michigan, the bowling alley. You worked there?
No.
That's the famous, their claim to fame is that's where Foxworthy came up with the you might be a redneck because he improvised. If your comedy club has a bowling alley, you might be a redneck. And that's where I worked there. I just come back from London and did a tour there and it went really well. And I was very full of myself thinking, oh, this is awesome. I'm so hip and cool. And I went there and just ate it. I mean, it was like the VFW in front of me, just staring at me. And I'm hitting my end stuff. I realize I've burned through everything.
Yeah.
I'm at 25 minutes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like I got 5 minutes left, my strongest stuff, but start working the crowd and I had to, you know, you got to do something.
Gotta
and
do
so
something.
I launched into my end and it was like 33 minutes. I'm supposed to do, you know, you're supposed to do 50 to an hour, 45.
Did you wrap that up
and
early?
So I left, good night, and nobody there to take the baton.
Oh, yes.
It's just me leaving.
That was it.
And then about 30 seconds later, the MC comes running out of the bar.
Does a half hour.
Just sprinting. Brian Haley, ladies and gentlemen.
Ah, shit.
It is not an exact science.
No. That was awesome,
things
though.
Happen, yeah.
That was awesome, man.
But, dude, do you have anything you want to plug? Are you in something? Should we watch for you in...
No, I just did an episode of Kevin Can Wait, but I'm working on
a
pilot right now. I love this idea. I'm working on writing a pilot with a comedian who's very funny. And
do we know that person?
No, she's an improv person, but she works at an advertising agency, so it's that's our hook.
Okay.
Is she currently works, and it's about an advertising agency, so it's kind of like a, tales of the nightmares.
Funny madmen.
Yeah. Tales in advertising.
Of how inept. It's called C-Level.
Cool, man.
Meaning CEO, the C-Level, like CFO, executives. She's an executive assistant.
And so the letter C-Level.
Yes, but it looks like C-minus because you can't believe what idiots these people are. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Do you have a website or anything we can send people to?
YouTube clips or something. Like
right
that.
Now,
should I just give out your home address?
Facebook.
A pet rabbit.
Facebook, just Twitter. Brian Haley. Haleywood at Twitter and Facebook, Brian/Brian Haley and Brian.Haley, I think. And then I'm retooling my website right now, so it's down. While I
alright, well, they know how to find you on social media. Thanks so much for doing the show,
awesome.
Man, it was great. A lot of great stories in there.
Great stuff.
I, as usual, am therealbenbailey.com and realbenbailey on all social media. You guys can find me there. Check my dates, listen for more Tall But Trues. DC Benny, you can always find
DCBenny.com. Yeah, and
the real DC Benny on Instagram, DC Benny on Twitter, DC Benny on Facebook.
Yeah, all those things.
All those things. Same as always. Thank you guys for listening to Tall But True. Come back for more great episodes. And then my stomach growling at the end.
Was that yours or mine?
I'm not sure. Time for a food break.
That whiskey kicked in. I gotta pee. I'm here.